The Tree of Hands, written by Ruth Rendell and read by Imelda Staunton.
Once, when Bennett was about 14, they'd been in a train together, and Mopsa had tried to stab her with a carving knife. Threatened her with it, rather. Mopsa had shouted and laughed and said wild things, and then she put the knife back in her bag. The memory of it came back vividly while she was waiting for Mopsa at Heathrow. Though she'd seen Mopsa many times since then, had lived under the same roof with her and seen how she could change, it was the scarved, shawled, streamered figure with its fleece of shaggy hair that she watched for. It ought to have been exciting, waiting here. Bennett remembered once meeting Edward here and how wonderful that first sight of him had been. All those people streaming through, all unknown, all strangers. And then Edward, so positively and absolutely Edward, that it was as if he was in colour and all the rest in black and white. Waiting for Mopsa wasn't like that. Waiting for Edward wouldn't be like that now. There was no one in her world for whom waiting would be like that, except James. And she couldn't see any reason why she and James should be separated, not for years and years anyway. A couple came through. The woman behind them held a small suitcase in one hand and a small hold-all in the other. She was a drab, colourless, washed-out woman. Her pale, wandering eyes rested on Bennett and recognised her. It was that way around. Otherwise, would Bennett ever have known? Yet this was Mopsa. This was her mad mother, who was kissing her, smiling. This was Mopsa, in a dowdy grey suit, her hair cut brusquely short and faded to tarnished silver. Bennett put the case on the pushchair, using it as a baggage trolley. She carried James, who snuffled and stared at this new, unknown grandmother. Mopsa had developed a brisk, springy walk. Bennett stopped herself staring. She asked after her father.
He's fine. He sent his love.
And you really like living in Spain?
I don't say it hasn't its drawbacks, but Dad hasn't had a sign of his asthma in 3 years. Keeps me fit, too.
Mopsa smiled cheerfully, as if her own illness had been no more than a kind of asthma.
I feel a fraud coming here for these tests. There's nothing wrong with me anymore. But they said it wouldn't do any harm, and why not have a holiday?
In her teens, Bennett used sometimes to say over and over to herself, I must not hate my mother. And then she would say, but she's ill. She can't help it. She's mad. Bennett shifted James onto her other hip, and he snivelled and clung to her.
He's got a nasty cold, said Mopsa. I wonder if you ought to have brought him out with a cold like that.
I'd no one to leave him with. You know, I've just moved house. Bennett would have been grateful if her mother had offered to sit in the back with James, but Mopsa was already in the passenger seat. Mopsa wanted to talk about her own troubles, about Spain, and about what she was going to do while in London. It struck Bennett that one always assumes that when mental illness is cured, one will be left with a nice person, an unselfish, thoughtful, sensible person. But of course this wasn't so. Why should it be? Underneath psychosis, there might just as well be normal nastiness as normal niceness. Not that Mopsa was nasty, far from it. But when the madness lifted, it revealed a solipsist of a very high order. The house in Hampstead, in the Vale of Peace, still seemed an alien place to return to. It was only 3 days since Bennett had moved in. Mopsa seemed never to have heard of this celebrated enclave where blue plaques honoured poets dead and gone, a painter, an impresario or two. The Celli had sailed paper boats on the pond, and Coleridge had begun, while sitting on a log on the green, another magical epic never to be completed, were items of literary lore that had never reached her. She eyed Bennett's tall and narrow Victorian villa.
I don't suppose you wanted it too ambitious, just you and the baby on your own.
James wasn't really a baby anymore, Bennett thought, unlocking the front door.